Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to show number 201 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat, I'm your host for today's show, and I'm co-founder and managing director of Woodread. And we're a creative agency who specialise in helping our clients use their brands to engage their people and so develop high-performance cultures inside organisations. And I'm very pleased to have as my guest for today's show, Peter Wakefield. Peter works, he's the owner of an organisation called Loving Monday. So welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you with us. So we were just talking before the show went live that we had our 200th show last week. We had David McLeod and Nita Clark with us, and we were doing a little bit of a story about the story so far in terms of Engage for Success and looking a little bit ahead to the future. And Peter and I have just been reminiscing about the old the days before Engage for Success and talking about concepts like the service profit chain and the way organisations like B&Q were fairly pioneering in taking engagement very seriously for their people. So Peter, for the benefit of our listeners who weren't able to listen to us reminiscing nostalgically, can you just give us a little bit of insight into who you are in terms of your background and how long you've been involved in engagement and so on?
Yes, certainly. It's been a sometimes worryingly long time now. I think I first started with engagement in 1997, and
right.
It's been a cornerstone of my career ever since. And it was, very early days from the early service profit chain thing that was coming out of America in the Sears Group. And I worked for a retailer at the time who had some contacts in the Sears Group and took that fully on board and started doing some similar things for the first time out of the US. And I was delivering a management workshop the other day, and I had a young lady in front of me in this workshop who had been, we worked out that I'd been working in employee engagement longer than she'd been born, which was a first for me and a bit concerning.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, that is more than a bit concerning, actually, isn't it, really? Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And so you're the owner of an organisation called Loving Monday, which I think is a fabulous name. Tell us, where did that come from? How did that all come about?
Loving Monday came about from, I think, the place where lots of good conversations come. So it was a conversation in a pub on a Sunday night. And my business partner and I were discussing what we had to do in the week ahead and what we were having to do on the following day, which was, of course, the Monday. And neither of us were particularly looking forward to our respective jobs list. And he said to me, well, we've got to do something about that. And I said, well, how do we do that then? And he said, well, we've got to start loving what we do, and therefore we start to love a Monday morning. And that was the genesis of a conversation that ebbed and flowed a bit and ultimately formed Loving Monday a couple of years later.
Righto. Okay, excellent. And so that's the sort of the ethos of your organisation is not only do you want to be able to go to work on a Monday loving it, but making sure that that's happening elsewhere in the country as well.
Yeah, very much so. It links, Loving Monday is a brand name that, as you say, is often very memorable to people. But really believes what we do.
Okay.
If you are fully engaged in what you do, then why is a Monday a problem to you? And of course, if you're fully engaged, it isn't a problem to you because you're looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Okay. Great. So we have a rather interesting title to our show today, which is Don't Focus on the Word Employee. And I'm going to sort of explore that with you a little bit more in a moment, if I may, Peter. But before we get into it, kind of explaining the thinking behind that, Engage for Success, employee engagement. We were talking about employee engagement on the other side of the jingle. Let me just put you on the spot and ask you, how would you define employee engagement? Because it's one of these, we could spend hours debating it. How would you like to sum it up?
I think, to me, much like yourself, Jamie, we were talking earlier, I've seen literally hundreds of definitions of engagement and what it's supposed to be and what it's not supposed to be. And I think for me, one of the things that I've learned in the 20-odd years working in engagement is it needs to be very individual. What engages me is what engages me, and how I engage others should be important to me. So to me, a definition of employee engagement is utterly individual to the person, but fundamentally to me it's about being engaging and not doing engagement, and that's one of the big things that we've taken into Loving Monday that's come from our experience. So definitions are individual in our world.
So being engaging, that means therefore that it's my responsibility. It's quite a as you say, it's a personal thing. I'm going to be responsible for being engaging with whoever I may be coming into contact with, depending on what my role in an organisation is, rather than a process or a programme or something of that nature.
Yeah, very much so. I think if you are, if you are responsible for engagement in a business, or you manage people, or you lead people, I think you have a responsibility to think about, okay, so it's not about the organisation that I'm working with and the stuff that this organisation is doing. It's about me being engaging to other people. And if I have the responsibility or the privilege of managing people, then I need to be conscious of what that means and understand what that means for the people that I'm leading or managing.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's go back to our headline then. Our headline, our show title today, Don't Focus on the Word Employee. Explain. What do you mean by that, Peter?
I think one of the things that I'm often asked is what is the, if you had one piece of advice, what would it be? And I think that single piece of advice would be, if you are looking to work on employee engagement and you're in an organization or your business is trying to develop its employee engagement, what would the single biggest thing that it could think about? And to me, that is, forget the fact that you're trying to engage employees, because we believe that you're not. You don't employ employees, you employ people. And I think if mm-hmm. you are trying to engage them, you need to engage the person and not mm-hmm. the job role. They are far right. more than an employee or a job role, and therefore to engage them properly needs to engage the person and not the employee.
Right. So again, it's about person, it's a humanity, individuals. Comes back to that ethos that you were talking about just now, doesn't it, really, then, about individuals. So tell me then, what is it that organisations need to do that they're not doing at the moment, in your view?
I think a lot of the organisations that we support and we work with from a client point of view, is they've often been banging their head against a bit of a brick wall, I think, for a little while before they get to us and saying, we have been trying to develop engagement in our business for some time, but we're not getting the results that we think we should, and we've got all the best intentions, and we're trying to do it in this and this and this way. And what they tend to talk to me about in those introductory meetings is all the things that they've done. All these things, ultimately, be they bits of communication or recognition schemes or whatever, data collection or data management or data communication, all these things start coming out of these conversations. And what they're describing is a number of processes, a number of things that they are doing to drive engagement. But what mm-hmm. rarely comes out in those early conversations is what they're doing to help people to simply be more engaging, and particularly how they are supporting their leadership or their management team, who have some of that accountability to, and some of that complexity and difficulty that goes with any management role. How is the organization supporting them to simply be more engaging? Because if that person right. that manages you is being more engaging to you, all that stuff and all that process that the organization is trying to do starts to get translated to a manner that, into something that means something to you. So, what are they doing that they need to do more of? It's just stop trying to think of engagement as a process, as a thing to do, and think of it as a state, as a thing to be.
To be. It's interesting you should say that, because that was one of the points that David McLeod was making in last week's show, actually, which is possibly one of his... one of the regrets that we could perhaps have is that people still latch on to this idea of employee engagement as an activity that an organisation has to do. That's something that needs to be ticked off a list, a task, a tick box exercise that has to be done, or something extra that has to be thought about being done, rather than it being inherent in the way that we as individuals interact with each other. And what you're describing is that people need help with that, in your view? They need help to be able to be engaging.
I think some do. I think if you, you know, in many of the organizations we work with, you find large quantities of managers. And within that large population of managers, you will have some people in there, some managers in there, who are naturally engaging. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to try. Everyone knows who they are. You'll have these people in your own work life and in your own career span. You will remember these people because they are fundamentally naturally engaging. And then you have the largest bunch of people who try. And want to be more engaging and want to provide greater support or greater engagement for the employees that they work alongside, but don't always have the skills, the knowledge or the behavior to truly maximize what they could be. And then in any organization, there's a small proportion, sadly, who don't want to try, who don't see the point or have been disengaged at some point in their career to the extent that they no longer see value in doing so. And that's a shame. And that comes from people not treating that person as an individual. I had a conversation recently with an organization talking about some disengaged managers that they had, and I said to him, I said, well, were they disengaged when they walked through the door, when they first started on day one in your organization? Were they disengaged? And they said no, they weren't. Yeah. And of course they weren't. They wouldn't have started if they were disengaged in the employer that they'd just given them a new job. They've been created in that organization somehow.
They've either
been created because someone has not engaged them, or they've set, or someone has set an expectation that they've not delivered to them, or someone's not treated them as a human being and started to, dare I say, treat them as a bit of a number or a bit of a bit of the sheep dip approach that often goes on. But somehow at some point they've become that disengaged person, and because someone's not invested into them and to find out what it takes to engage them as a human being.
Do you see a difference? Is there a different level of responsibility between leaders, senior leaders, and line managers? Do they all bear equal responsibility for this, or is there other responsibilities different?
I think the only difference is the scale, I think. And from a leader point of view, if you're a leader of a large organization, then you have some additional challenges, visibility, complexity of communication routes, geography, all these things become more complex if you are a leader of a large organization, certainly. And therefore, they have to set a standard in a manner that is visible, that isn't always present. And that gives them some additional challenges. But the skill set of a leader or a manager being engaging is identical. And it's not a skill set exclusive to leaders or managers. It's exclusive to an engaging person. And we all, we have them in our lives, we have them in our work lives. So if we're lucky, we certainly have them in our personal lives. Everyone has friends and best friends and people that they choose to spend time with. And why do they do that? It's because they find these people engaging. And some of that skill set is what leaders and managers need to take note of, I think.
Okay.
But there's a difference in complexity.
Yeah,
the principles are the same.
The principles that underpin it are the same, though. Yes. Okay. So, can you tell me a little bit then about, because I think we can probably all recognise an organisation that will talk about all the things they have done and the processes and the reward and the recognition, and we've done this and we've tried that and we've put this in place and we've done this, that, and the other. But when you sit down and talk to organisations about actually how you can support their people become more naturally engaging in the way they interact with their team. Can you just perhaps tell us a few stories about where you've done that? And more importantly, I think, the difference that's made. Are you able to sort of point to some real strong outcomes as a result of focusing on that side of things rather than the do this, do that, did the other?
Certainly. I think without naming clients, I think there's a number of organisations that has been very successful, and one that's springing to mind now is a business who is a manufacturing business with 2,000 or 3,000 people that we worked with last year, and they were starting on their engagement journey and were treating it in the very same way as we just articulated it, about the process and how they were going to collect data and what structure they were going to collect that data to. And we managed to get to them early enough to say, actually, let's not just prepare the business for what it's about to do, but let's prepare the managers and leaders of this organization for what it really means. So one of the things that we do when we're early days with a client is just say to them, okay, let's just have a look at what budget you're looking to spend and where we can best apportion it for you to get the most benefit of that. And sometimes what that means is spending a lot less money actually gathering data and a lot more money doing something about it once you've got it. And how that manifests itself in our world is spending some time with those leaders and those management teams just to highlight to them, okay, so this is engagement, this is what it is, this is your role in delivering that, and this is some of the skill set and some of the behavioral cycles that it will need from you to be engaging to the people that you're looking to develop engagement for. So yeah, it's very much about spending time with leaders, spending time with management teams, and that's sometimes on a one-to-one basis, sometimes that's on a one-to-many basis. So if it's managers, it's often in groups of people. If it's leaders, it's often one-on-one. And we have a number of tools that we use to work with. At Loving Monday, we have what we call the DNA of engagement, and that works on three different areas. One, how do you create conversations? How do you build conversations to build trust, to create relationships with people? And the second element of that is about response. So how do you respond to another person when you're in an engaging scenario where you're looking to drive engagement in your business? So some of the good old emotional intelligence drivers are in that piece. And the third bit is about looking at the environment that you're in. So depending on the business that you're in, the culture of your organization, the working environment, the operational environment, noticing how that changes or adds complexity to your ability to engage is kind of crucial as well. We work with clients in all different sectors, and we've worked with both individuals and groups of managers and leaders in those businesses. And what it does is, I think, it speeds up their process. So in that example with the manufacturing business, we ran a load of management workshops before they even had data out of their survey partner. So that when they got it, those managers were clear on what their responsibilities were, clear on how they had to create conversation with their teams about the information that had just been put in their hands, and clear how to simplify some of the activities that go on in there, and how to engage people in not only the data that they have kindly offered to give their opinion that creates, but also about how do they engage people in creating action. So data in itself doesn't change anything. It's only what you do with it that makes any difference whatsoever. So yeah, that's some of our measure is how quickly that action planning process takes and how wide it is spread across the organization.
I see. So interesting. So they were ready to listen to what they were going to be told even before they had had the results. So they were, because, you know, you sometimes get that sense in that sometimes there's a degree of, well, I'm going to run a survey, but actually I don't really want to hear what people are going to tell me, or I don't like what they've told me, so I'm not going to act on it. You've kind of got them primed in advance that something had to happen with it, irrespective of what was going to be said.
Yeah. So there's priming for the action planning process and the, you know, the things that need to go on once that information is in their hands. But there's also preparing those managers for what's going to happen to them when they get that information. And you get a whole host of effects and behavior changes in managers when they even talk about some of this subject matter. You know, so I remember having a conversation with one of these early, is a junior manager in this business. And he said, I'm really concerned about getting information from the team of people that I manage about my own personal behavior. I've never had anything like this before, and I don't really know how to even begin to create a conversation with my team about how we can drive some of that improvement, because I recognize that I have a part to play. I recognize that all this data isn't all about me, but I know that some of it is, and I've not been in that situation before. So we just talked through some of that, you know, some of that emotion that is going to be created in the manager, some of that good old change curve stuff and denial and anger and all those bits and pieces of the early part of that change curve, just to sort of get them a head start to say, okay, this is going to happen. It's all perfectly good and natural, and it's not something that I need to be afraid of. It's not something that is going to come back and bite me or someone's going to hit me over the head with. It's just something that is a conversation that I need to create with the people who had the good decency to provide me with the data in the first place. Mm-hmm. And all I've got to do is ask some questions and be honest and integral and have some authenticity in those conversations. And the rest mm-hmm. will start to happen.
So it sounds like you're a little bit of a therapist then. You always put him on the couch and reassured him.
It's not a role that we advertise.
So what do you think? What do you think holds leaders back from treating people like people, then, and remembering that they are not employees? Going back to the title of our show today, you know, they're not employees; they are people. What stops people from doing that? Is it baggage they leave on the doorstep when they walk into the workplace? Do they sort of change? Do they turn into some kind of corporate monster or what?
Yeah, some do, yeah. But most don't, I think. I think a lot of people, what holds them back? I think their own past experiences have a big part to play in it. Their own line manager, of course, has an enormous part to play, whoever they are. I had a conversation with a chief exec recently who was explaining his relationship with the chair of his board, and it wasn't where either of them needed it to be, and it was casting an enormous shadow over that chief executive's ability to actually perform his role. So I think that the good old power and politics and all that stuff has a big impact on there, and that's, I think, more common as you get further up the hierarchy. In itself is another big problem, I think, in a lot of organizations, because it produces expectations and accountability that isn't always genuine. But often people are quite scared, certainly in those really senior management positions, and they seem to have it in their head that they need to have all the answers. And actually what we help them to understand is, certainly with engagement, they don't need to have all the answers. They just need to ask the questions. The people who have all the answers are the people that gave them the information in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's not their job to come up with the answers. It's actually going to be detrimental if they do actually start coming up with all the answers. But what will add greater value to them is if they go back to those people with that information and say, okay, here it is. This is what it says. Let me help you to interpret it and understand what it means. And then let's create a conversation about what's next. I think it's people trying to be the job role they hold and not be the person that they are, in short.
Right. And I guess if there's a degree of scared in wariness, it's easy to build walls around you that you can hide behind, isn't it? And maybe it's easier to build a wall around yourself that you can hide behind if you don't perceive people to be individuals or people, that you just see them as an employee, and therefore it makes it easier to perhaps treat them in a harsher manner, maybe. I don't know. Interesting. You were talking about past experiences and also people's own line managers and the extent to which they can cast a shadow for good or ill. Tell me, have you had a great one in your career?
I have three. I'm really fortunate.
Right.
I've had three fabulous managers. I've had a number of managers, and I've had some pretty poor ones as well, to be fair. But I've had three that would stack up as exceptional to me. Uh-huh. All three for very different reasons, and all three, fortunately, at very different points in my career. And one that springs to mind is earlier in my days, I was a retail manager. I started in retail at the age of 16, and I left when I was in my mid-30s. And I got to a point where I was a store manager in retail. And my area manager at the time said to me, at the first line of my appraisal, he said to me, "Peter, you're never going to set the world alight as a store manager," which was an interesting opening line to my appraisal.
He said, and you were how old?
I was 25, 26, right. That sort of ballpark, I think.
Right.
Very green behind the gills, if you know what I mean.
And he said to me,
"But it's the people side of the business is where you excel. So why don't we see if we can move your career in that direction? Therefore, you'll spend more of the time doing the stuff that you enjoy, and we expect that that'll be therefore something that you're good at, and less of the time doing the bits and pieces of your job that you don't really enjoy, and lo and behold, you're not so good at." And I didn't even consider it as a possibility until he mentioned it.
Right.
And he went and found me various common opportunities and roles that I could move progressively, admittedly, over from an operational role into organizational development type and learning and development roles. And I remember that conversation almost word perfect to this day. And it was dare I say it, 20-odd years ago or so now.
Yeah, real formative opportunity then.
Yeah, exactly. And he saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself. And that's the beauty and that's the power of management. And that's
Absolutely. What
an engaging person, an engaging manager can really do to help the engagement of another and to drive things that even the individual themselves doesn't even know possible.
Isn't that, do you not think that's probably almost the most important thing that a manager should do? It's the biggest, almost the biggest responsibility they have, isn't it? To bring on their people, to unlock doors for them, to give them that leg up and to push their agenda. But often you don't see that. You see people actually worried that's going to somehow put them in a bad light rather than a good light and sort of back away from that. But it's a bit counterproductive, isn't it?
It is, and there's some of the stuff that we talked about earlier, you know, the hierarchy and the power and the politics and egos and job titles and all this other rubbish that goes on in organisations. None of that really helps that, because it's actually engagement that we're talking about here in its purest form is a conversation and a relationship that develops between two people. And that is what drives memorable, truly memorable, life-changing sometimes interactions, as I experienced, fortunately, that fundamentally changed my engagement, not on that day, on that year, they fundamentally changed my engagement for the rest of my career, and I still remember that as a changing moment in my career because of a conversation that I had that I didn't even know I was going to have because someone took time to engage me.
As a person. Not a number on a payroll. No,
exactly.
Okay, so I'm sure actually if our listeners would to stop and think now, I think you probably sparked something. We could all probably sit down and think about who's the best manager we've ever had and what was it about that manager that makes us think of them as the best manager we've ever had. And I put down to a penny that it would involve something along the lines that you've talked about in terms of them putting themselves out to help develop, coach, stretch, encourage, find opportunities for their people. It's very, very important. Part of the job.
It's a question we sometimes ask in some of our management workshops is, think about that person. Find that person in your mind. Who was the most engaging manager to you? And then ask yourself why. And what comes when you ask them why is that people start to tell stories. They're telling individual stories about things that matter to them. And all these stories are about one thing. They're about how a person got to know them as a person. That's it. And as a consequence of a manager investing some time to find out a little bit more about the person that she or he was managing, all of a sudden that relationship grew. All of a sudden a greater level of trust manifested itself in that relationship. And all of a sudden a greater level of engagement came as a consequence of that. So if you think about those questions and not only who was the best manager, but why were they the best manager, what you will think of is a level of engagement. An engagement interaction is the start of that question.
It's really, really powerful stuff, isn't it? So at the end of the day, though, do we have to, does that mean then, from what you've described, that we can stop worrying about measuring any of this in terms of success, or, you know, do we need to be able to do that, or is that a bit of a red herring?
No, I think it's really essential. I think good, clean engagement data is essential, because I'm not wedded to how you are gathering it. I think, you know, I still see a place for the good old annual survey. We work with, you know, pulse survey companies and application based data gathering organizations as well, and I think they all have a place, providing you are treating it as, in our mind, engagement data has a single purpose, and that is to create a conversation. So it doesn't really matter what you gather or how you gather it. Because the data will change nothing. The only thing that will change something is the conversation that you create as a consequence for it. So where the data is really important in ours is it helps you prioritize those conversations. It helps you understand which conversations you need to have, where you need those conversations need to take place, and with whom do those conversations need to be part of it. So, it's essential to help you prioritize what you do in terms of driving engagement in the business.
But do not confuse the measurement with those list of things that you're doing that we talked about at the beginning, you know, the survey, the whether it be the annual survey or an ongoing pulse survey. Don't imagine that is engagement. That is simply a way of providing insight and data that then, as you say, triggers conversations, which themselves result then lead on to actions, because otherwise it's just data for data's sake, measurement for measurement's sake, which is a fairly pointless exercise, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah, I think engagement data is sometimes seen by a lot of organizations as an ending point. And to us, it's a beginning. It's a beginning of a conversation. It's a beginning that shows you how to prioritize and create conversation. And so many people go through what they will describe to us sometimes as their engagement process or their engagement strategy. And they walk me through this big old thing that ends with gathering data and therefore them having the ability to make a decision. And it just doesn't work like that. You know, if you get a group of managers sitting in a room with a load of engagement data making decisions as a consequence of it, I'll pretty much guarantee you they'll get it wrong.
A good way to end. We've come to the end of our show, Peter. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I'm going to have to say goodbye. So thank you again, Peter.
And, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.